Lando Norris wins the Hungarian Grand Prix for his first Grand Prix victory as world champion.
Woo! Beautiful.
That was as good a drive as we've, I think, ever seen out of him. It was a really sublime performance.
Verstappen from Milesburg, what a move from the four-time champ!
Do you think Lewis will be eaten up by what happened?
Oh, yeah.
And particularly by Max, of all
things. Yeah, I can't make it better, that's for sure.
The mechanics said that they could look into Fernando's eyes and see the fire burning again. A fifth different winner in 11 races. What a race we had at the Hungaroring. Hello and welcome, everyone, to the Budapest Paddock. It's F1 Nation with me, Tom Clarkson, and F1 TV expert and IndyCar race winner, James Hinchcliffe. Now, Hinch, great to have you on the show again. Lots to discuss after that one. What was the headline for you?
The dominance of Lando Norris. I mean, that was a truly, truly dominant performance. And I don't want to say unexpected, but to a degree unexpected, because McLaren's not been the car to beat so far this year. He was on pole by a hundredth of a second, so there was no real indications that it was going to be quite such a thrashing. But he executed at such a high level today. Team did a great job, even after losing the lead. I mean, he was so fast, he had strategy options. Even not being given the preferential strategy for McLaren, he was able to overcome and ultimately end up with the victory. So for me, it was just super impressive performance from him.
Well, look, let's break down his race. Can we talk about the opening lap? First of all, so he gets away in the lead, and then we get round turn one. What was your take on what happened at turn two with his teammate?
I think it's, you know, we always talk about how much this is a track position race, and he was so desperate to hang on to the lead that you're barreling into turn two. It's downhill, it's combined braking. It's windier than it's, you know, it's been all weekend. There's different rubber on the track, you're full of fuel. He overshot it. I mean, it's as simple as that. Oscar was looking to the outside, so he wanted to make sure he didn't give him the opportunity to actually pull off an outside pass, because that's embarrassing. And he just slightly overdid it. I mean, I think people underestimate how difficult it is to judge the braking points and your minimum speeds and all that on the first lap of a Grand Prix when you have a full tank of fuel. You haven't been on the track in almost 24 hours. There's lots of things have been on the track in that time. It's a very difficult thing to do. And when you're the leader, you're the first guy to the corner. You're kind of the guinea pig. Everyone else can judge off you. So simple mistake. Luckily, he hung on to it, only lost one spot, but it was race on from there.
And then from there, I felt like we were in 2025 for a while, because we had the two McLarens out front. There was, you know, Lando questioning strategy, trying to force Oscar to pit early and all that kind of thing. It felt like the papaya rules were going to raise their ugly head. But there was two significant things that Lando said in the post-race press conference. One, the car was, and I'm quoting him, horrible to drive at points in that race, but it was always super quick. Just looking from the outside in, did you see a car that was horrible to drive?
No, I didn't see that, but I certainly know the feeling. It's a bizarre one, because you would think a quick car is a comfortable car, but that's often not the case. Just because something is fast, I mean, I think that's actually where Max excels, right? I mean, often when the Red Bull was the fastest was when other drivers couldn't even get a lap time out of it. So sometimes a quick car is actually quite an uncomfortable car to drive, and conditions today were very tough. The wind was very gusty, and I think a bit stronger, certainly at the start of the race, than what we had seen most of the weekend. But ultimately, it was still better than the other cars, right? So even if he was a bit uncomfortable, imagine how uncomfortable a Williams was.
Other thing Lando said, let's bear in mind, you know, he won the Grand Prix by 15 seconds. He said, I am doing a better job this year compared to last year when I won the World Championship. For 40 laps, I was able to sit within a second of Oscar Piastri, my teammate, and I just knew I was going to win this race. Are you surprised to hear him say that? Surprised that he is doing a better job?
Honestly, no, because I think getting through 2025, surviving 2025, coming out on top in 2025, that's an incredible experience for a driver to have. That's now experience in the locker, right? So you should be a better driver the next year. And because he doesn't have that pressure, that cloud hanging over his head of will he ever win a championship, he's got that in his back pocket. He can drive a bit more free. I think he handles the pressure a little bit differently now. And so, no, it doesn't surprise me that he feels like he's driving better. And honestly, that was as good a drive as we've ever seen out of him. And he said it, the gap that he was able to keep to Oscar for as many laps as he was, he still had pace in hand. It's not like he was frying the tires to do it. And once he got that clean air, you know, in the second round of stops, on old tires, he was running almost as quick as Piastri on brand new. So, it was a really sublime performance.
Hinch, you haven't been at a race, all right, for a while. Do you think there's a swagger about Lando outside the car now? Do you see any change in him?
You could call it swagger. I just see it more as a confidence. It's a comfort, maybe. More comfortable in himself, more comfortable in his position in this paddock and his place in the sport. And I think winning a championship is a normal reaction. That's something that you get when you've checked that box. I mean, that's what all these drivers went to bed at night as kids dreaming about accomplishing. And he did it. And he did it in a straight-up fight, and it wasn't easy. And he survived some difficult days to do it. So, I think he's got a different belief in himself and a different confidence. But I think that's helping him deal with some of these early races where the McLaren wasn't always competitive and they're not dominating the way they have been the last 2 years. That can be frustrating for a driver, but I think he's handling it very well because of that confidence he's gained from last year.
And what do you make of the gap between Lando and teammate Oscar Piastri?
It's interesting because at the start of the season, you know, obviously Piastri had two DNSs, right? And then first time he actually got going, finished on the podium in Japan. I would say for the first few races, it actually looked like Oscar was getting a better handle on the new car than Lando was. And at some point, I'm trying to think back as to when. Maybe it's Miami's because that's always a great place for him. But it sort of shifted back towards Lando. And they haven't been fighting for the win. They haven't been fighting for podiums that often. And so you sometimes lose track of those battles for 5th, 6th, 7th, right? I feel like we overlooked a lot of really good drives from George Russell last year because he was finishing 5th, but it was a blinder of a drive in a car that shouldn't have been 5th. I feel like Oscar and Lando have kind of been having that sort of battle between each other, and it has gone Lando's way the last few races, and it's tough to put a finger on why. Why is, you know, George a little bit behind Kimi? Why is it look like Charles maybe a bit behind Lewis right now? It's new car, new race.
I mean, Andrea Stella, team principal here, I say here because we're actually in the McLaren motorhome, but Stella said, I think it was on Saturday, that maybe the difference is that when a car is moving around underneath you as a driver, Lando is able to deal with that better than Oscar. And we have kind of seen that in the past, like take Mexico as an example, high altitude race, less downforce, car does move, even with the ground effect cars, the car did move around a lot more. And you know, and Lando invariably had the edge over him. And of course, we got less downforce this year. The cars are narrower. Is that it? Does that make sense to you?
It makes perfect sense. You know, we talked about how Oscar would excel in the high grip situations, places like Qatar and Silverstone and Zandvoort. Whereas Lando was clearly had an advantage in any of the lower grip tracks or just lower grip conditions. 2026 is a lower grip condition than 2025. Where that threshold is impossible to know unless you're looking at the data, right? In terms of at what downforce level does Oscar start having a harder time finding the lap time than if it was above a certain downforce number. But it makes perfect sense to me that the way the cars move and having less downforce, it might not even be a function of Oscar's natural style so much as it's the style that he's raced ever since he's been in Formula One, right? He came in with that ground effects car. Lando didn't. Lando's been through a couple generations now. But everything that Oscar knows about F1 was a ground effects car. And so it might just take him a little longer to kind of recalibrate and learn this new style.
But, and let's not forget that Oscar Piastri won the Formula 2 championship at the first time of asking. He won the Formula 3 championship at the first time of asking. Those cars have a lot less downforce than Formula 1. So it's not like he can't do it.
Correct.
It's just got to get his head around it, right?
Absolutely.
And I guess as these mature regulations get more mature and, you know, McLaren develop more and more and they put more downforce on the car, we should maybe see the gap between them reduce in the second half of the year.
And it's even things like if you think back to last year, right, when Oscar seemed to have a bit of an advantage over Lando. And then there was a front suspension upgrade, right? There was a feeling that Lando was missing in the front of the car. They brought us a suspension upgrade, and it wasn't a performance upgrade. It was a feeling upgrade. Lando kept it. Oscar didn't. But that was kind of a turning point. That helped Lando unlock what he needed in the car to get the best out of himself. We're one small adjustment away from Oscar doing the same thing. So your point about the car still developing so much, I think, is very valid. I don't think it's just a function of adding downforce and it'll start ebbing more towards Oscar. I think there could be something that he, a feeling that he needs from the car that the team still needs to figure out how to give him.
And we saw it at Red Bull. Just, it's a slightly different example. Do you remember earlier in the year when they had to change something on the steering rack to give Max a little bit more feel? Well, Max was the one who was more outspoken about it. So it is tiny little nuances that isn't always downforce. Yeah.
We saw pole decided by 1/100th of a second. Yeah. Tiny nuances is the, it's the, yeah, that is the DNA of this, yeah, sport.
And I feel that McLaren are back in terms of they put upgrades on the car this weekend. Clearly they worked. It took Lando Friday to get his head around them, and then bam, on Saturday, I don't think anyone topped him in any session, practice or qualifying. So do you think it'll be track specific? Do you think when we go to Zandvoort in a month's time, McLaren will have this kind of pace relative to the opposition?
It's interesting because Zandvoort, I feel like it's actually kind of similar to this track.
It's a bit of a go-kart track in a way.
Yeah, it's like a bit of a, it's tight and twisty. There's not a lot of long straights. There's some fast corners and a little bit of elevation. It's got some similar traits, certainly. And Lando's always run very well at Zandvoort as well. So I don't know if we'll actually be able to judge it even in the next race, because this one is absolutely one of Lando's standout tracks. Always run well here. I think last year was the first time he'd been outqualified by a teammate, and that was by 1/100th of a second, and ultimately still won the race. But I think that they've clearly added performance to this car. And I think one of the big things, too, is, you know, they've had the same power unit in the back as Mercedes, but there's been a clear deficit in the straights. I think they're getting better at figuring out how to utilize the PU and how to maximize the potential there. And I'm seeing that deficit shrink. And when you look at the GPS traces from a cornering standpoint, yeah, they've built a very good car. They have upgraded it to a very good car. And if they can start matching Mercedes on the power unit, you know, deployment side, yeah, it very much could potentially not just be a Hungary and Zandvoort type of... It could be quick at Baku and strong at Monza as well. So we'll see.
Look, he's now 91 points behind Kimi Antonelli, who's at the top of the table. What do you think he's thinking as he sits on the beach for the next couple of weeks? Doable, or is Antonelli too far ahead?
I think the best strategy is to not think about it, right? Because it is such a long shot. And it's we saw Max and what he did last year, certainly. But the best approach is it sounds sort of cliche, but you take each race one at a time, and it doesn't really matter where he is in the championship. You just got to go out and try and win them all. And if we get to a point where by, you know, Austin, by Brazil, he's clawed back enough points, you can count him in the fight, then maybe the mentality switches a bit. But for right now, I think it's enjoy yourself, you know, and enjoy this new car, keep pushing the team, let the team keep pushing you, and see where you guys can go with it.
This episode is sponsored by Hexclad. After a busy run of races, I'm really looking forward to spending a little bit more time at home during the summer break. We all love cooking in my family, so it's a lovely way to spend time together when we get the chance. What nobody enjoys quite as much is the washing up afterwards. And that's just one of the reasons I really like Hexclad. Their pans combine the performance of stainless steel with the convenience of non-stick, so you get excellent heat control and a proper sear without spending the rest of your evening scrubbing at the sink. They're dishwasher safe, easy to wipe clean, and even oven safe up to 480 degrees Celsius. The stainless steel handles stay cool while you cook, and I love that they're metal utensil safe too, so there's no need to switch tools halfway through. For me, that's what good cookware should do. It should help you get the result you want without making the whole process feel like hard work and leave you with more time to enjoy the food and the people you made it for. Every Hexclad product also comes with a lifetime warranty, which tells you a lot about how much confidence they have in what they make. More than 1 million customers already use Hexclad, and Gordon Ramsay uses it both at home and in his restaurants, and we all know he's not exactly easy to impress. So whether you're hosting all summer long or just want to make everyday cooking feel easier, this is the upgrade your kitchen deserves. And for a limited time, our listeners get 10% off with our exclusive link. Just head to hexclad.co.uk/nation. That's hexclad.co.uk/nation. Offer excludes bundles and other items already on sale. Support our show and let them know we sent you. Right now on F1 Nation, it's your chance to win some race tickets. We're heading to Madrid for the first time this September for the 2026 Spanish Grand Prix, and we have a pair of grandstand tickets to give away. The lucky winner will have seats in the Team 55 grandstand, packed with people cheering for hometown hero Carlos Sainz. The competition is free to enter. Just go to f1.com/podcast-win-Madrid and follow the instructions and fill in the form. The competition is open to listeners of all three official F1 podcasts, F1 Beyond the Grid, F1 Nation, and F1 Explains. The entry deadline is midnight UK time on Friday, the 31st of July, 2026. The prize is a pair of grandstand tickets only for the Formula One Spanish Grand Prix 2026 in Madrid. You must be aged 18 or over to enter. For full terms and conditions and your chance to win, go to f1.com/podcast-win-Madrid. Good luck. Let's bring it on to Red Bull now. Max Verstappen told us earlier that he spent the whole of the final lap of this Grand Prix working out how he'd got there, how he'd got this P2, because he said the pace of the car just hasn't been there all weekend. He thinks it's been one of his best drives to get that P2. And there was a superb move on Lewis Hamilton as well on lap 16, which we'll come to. But I feel Max is going to reflect not only on this race, but this first half of the season with a little bit of frustration.
I think it's more than a little, to be fair. I mean, the very public issues with the rear wing and the accidents that those have cost, you know, that's been frustrating for him. We hear him on the radio all the time, upset about shifting and car balance. And, you know, he said things today like the aerodynamics are broken and we don't have tire degradation, we have car degradation. I don't even know what that means. Like, that's how bad it is. Yes. There are terms they're making up for how bad he feels that car
and
is.
And how often have we seen Max Verstappen spin in a qualifying session, for goodness sake?
Today, I mean, you know, I spoke to him in Park for May. Max is here to win. That's one of the happiest I've seen Max with a second place. He even was kind of looking around like, I don't know how I'm here. I genuinely don't know how he did this. He did that Max thing that we've come to know him capable of doing by getting in front of the Ferraris, by keeping them behind him, which was incredible. When he lost out to Lewis in the pit cycle with the undercut, to actually get that move done on track and then keep him behind again, that was a remarkable drive. And you could tell it took a lot out of him. That was not an easy day.
What did you make of that move on Hamilton?
Verstappen from nowhere, from miles back. What a move from the four-time champ. Hamilton cleared Lawson. Verstappen cleared Lawson and then Hamilton. How did he stop that car?
Brilliant. I think potentially Hamilton didn't even really acknowledge him as a threat because you had the Racing Bulls there that was in between them briefly. And so sort of was like, oh, well, he's busy racing him. This is my chance to focus on getting a good exit out of turn one and try to open that gap. So maybe he was even a little gentler on entry because he didn't think he was under threat. But it was just so beautifully done. It was completely controlled, no lockup. I mean, it was incredible. And that's against Hamilton, who had been dominant on the brakes. The big brake zones here this weekend in turn one and turn 12, that's where he was making up a majority of his lap time. So against the strongest guy on the brakes this weekend, he pulled off that move in a car that you can't argue was in the same league as the Ferrari.
How long does that stay with a driver? Do you think Lewis will be sitting on his plane home tonight being eaten up by what happened?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And particularly by Max of all
people.
Yeah,
that doesn't help. I can't make it better, that's for sure. And unfortunately, he has, several weeks before he gets to get back in a race car and forget about it. But you have to eventually just kind of learn from it and push those things aside. But he'll be thinking about it for sure.
Quick word on Hadjo. scores points for the seventh race in a row. The day after Laurent Mekies, his boss, said, yes, he is definitely the best partner for Max we've had, certainly in recent years. I feel like he's on a roll. He's growing in confidence, getting more impressive by the race.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's been impressive for quite some time. The he's certainly kept his streak alive of being in Q3 at every race so far this year. Not something Max has done, so let's put it that way. Like you say, the point scoring finishes are there. That's something that they've been struggling with on that second car. But you look at a weekend like this where, you know, the car is a handful and the race is going to be a tough one to manage. And Max just is able to put it in a podium position and his teammates not. Not that Hadjar's doing a bad job at all. He's doing a phenomenal job. But it just shows you what Max is capable of, even against the best number two they've had for half a decade.
Tell me more about the Max factor, right? Is it just consistency? Or is there more to it than that? Is it an ability to read the race better than the people around you on the racetrack?
It's an ability to read the race. It's a situational awareness. It's an ability to adapt to the car. He came on the radio on lap 5 or something and said, I think the damping's gone. Like, I think the dampers are broken. And he just drives through it. Like, he whatever was wrong with the car, he finds a way to drive around it. It's a very difficult skill for a driver. It's one that people talk about. Oh yeah, this so and so driver is very good at, if it's got a bit of understeer, they can still drive it. A bit of oversteer, they can still drive it. We know Max hates understeer, but when there's even just a more fundamental flaw with the car, he's still going to get everything and then some out of the package. And it's not something that you see. I think the consistency is in how he can do that. You know, when the car is, especially when it's below average, how he's still able consistently to put it up further up the grid than it should be and finishing further in the races than it should.
And GP, his race engineer, was glowing in his praise over the radio on the slowdown lap. And he's not like that after every podium, is he?
And it's like I said, I mean, when Max came to Parc Fermé, he was like legitimately happy to be there, which he never is unless he's winning. So I think the whole team there, they've had a horrible weekend, right? Both drivers spun in qualifying. Max has been, complaining, like we said, upshifts, downshifts, aero balance, whatever. So they were kind of just in a survival mode, it felt like. And then all of a sudden they're in the fight for a podium spot.
Three podiums in the last four races. So, when you look at on paper, you'd think, oh, Red Bull are making progress. But then you actually look at the gaps and you look at where they are relative to McLaren this weekend. And then it doesn't tell the full story, does it?
It's the fourth fastest car today, and they finished second. Granted, Oscar had a problem, but he was still going to be on the podium. He was still going to be third. Wild, wild to think with the fourth fastest car. They just outraced them.
What about the championship leaders, constructors, and driver? Let's start with Kimi Antonelli. Scores a podium from seventh on the grid. Yes, okay, he was helped by Oscar Piastri's retirement. But what I liked about this was that this was never a race he was going to win from P7. Yet in it, we talk about Max factor, a little bit of Kimi factor, he still extracted the most. And look what happened to his teammate. And we'll come on to his teammate, but a massive gulf.
Super impressive. And this has really kind of been the story of Kimi's season is young kid, 1 year of experience. Nobody pegged him as ready to take the fight to George, be the, I don't want to say the number one driver. I don't think they're looking at them as number one or number two or anything like that, but consistently be the quickest. But he's got to go through all these things, right, that drivers do in their careers that you don't experience just in year one. And all these different scenarios that have been thrown at him that he's experienced for the first time at the front of the grid with that kind of pressure and that kind of attention while leading the championship, every single one of them he has navigated flawlessly. We haven't seen any of the silly mistakes. We haven't seen him buckle under any kind of pressure. We've seen him win driving away. We've seen him win with, being caught and having someone right on his gearbox. Tracks where they weren't expecting to do well. Monaco, he goes and chucks it on pole, wins the race by a mile. And then here, very difficult situation. They weren't the fastest car for probably the first time, this season. Has the penalty, tries to pull a George in qualifying, doesn't work out, has the penalty, starts further back, and in a race and at a track that you're not supposed to really move up, you're not expected to move up, they did what you had to do, which was something different, right? They were, it looked like going for the one stop, at one point. And even when they called him in for that second stop, Kimi's like, why? I'm in P2. We can do this. Let's just keep rolling. Would have been interesting to see if they had done that, waited for the VSC. You didn't know it was coming, but had they committed to the one stop, they would have got that free stop with the VSC, and he would have finished ahead of Max. Would have been P2. He still finished ahead of the second in the championship. This was a phenomenal, phenomenal day for Kimi. And again, it's another example of every new situation with that level of pressure that he's being, you know, put into. He's handling it very well.
Had he started further up the grid, do you think Lando could have been in his sights? I mean, you say not the fastest car this weekend, but we kind of didn't really see him flat chat. There was the issue in qualifying, and then the race. There's so many compromises in the race, aren't there?
Yeah, especially when you're going long in the way that he did, right? That stint he was on. So it's tough to know exactly, what the true race pace was. But Lando was so quick. I would find it a little hard to believe he had that kind of pace in the bag had he been on the same strategy and, you know, similar track position as Lando. That said, I didn't think he was going to have the kind of pace in the race in Monaco that he did. So it certainly is possible.
I mean, he's now 50 points ahead of the second place driver in the World Championship, 59 ahead of his teammate. I mean, he's going to be sitting on the beach in this break thinking, pinching himself, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to him afterwards. I was like, did you ever think that at the halfway point of the season you'd have two Grand Prix in the bag, like in hand in the championship? And, you know, he was a sweet, humble kid. He gives you the answer you think he would give you. But there's no way he ever would have thought at the start of the season in Barcelona at the shakedown that this was where he'd be sitting, you know, 6 months down the road.
Even Hinch, FP3 in Melbourne.
Yeah.
Remember, he crashed at turn one there. Like, yeah. The journey has same been old. So spectacular.
Yeah, same old Kimi, right? Like, he's got those rookie errors, and then, you know, look what he's done. It has been. It's been truly spectacular.
And what of George Russell? Starts P6, goes into anti-stall, and that guy just cannot get a break.
He can't, and it's kind of joined with the fact that he also just doesn't have the pace. He just wasn't there this weekend.
You think it spirals because you don't have the pace. Sometimes you then... I'm not saying that's what happened on the grid, but it does often spiral, doesn't it?
We're at the point now, and on this show, Jolien and I bet the house on George. And after the first five, six races making excuses and I'm out of things to say. At this point, if it were me in my career, and I had come in with the sort of expectation around my season that George did, and we were at the halfway point, and I was at the place that George is at, my reaction would be like, all right, it's gone. Let's not worry about it. Let's not think about it. Kind of go into the mindset that we were just talking about for Lando at this point.
Is that self-preservation as much as anything? Otherwise, you'd go mad?
I think that's part of it, certainly. But I genuinely believe that in those scenarios, you know, if you're not like embroiled in a very tight, you know, intense battle for the championship, the leads going back and forth week in and week out, I do think that drivers can overthink things. I think you can get in your own head pretty easily. And I do think that certainly for me, I performed better when I was a little bit freer and kind of was able to let things, you know, not really.
But doesn't everyone hinge?
I think some people really perform well under pressure and some people really perform well when they're free. I think that's kind of what we're seeing out of Lando. I think he's a bit freer this year, and that's why he's driving, in his words, better than he ever has. George came in with a lot of pressure, a lot of expectation, and expectation's a dangerous thing. And if you can just get rid of that now, and I'm not saying concede that Kimi's better, but concede that Kimi's having a better year this year, and that I've had XYZ work against me, and so this is the position I'm in, and kind of give it like a screw it sort of attitude, it just frees you up. And in my career, when I had moments like that, that immediately could turn things around so quickly. If you start overthinking how to fix things that were ultimately out of his control, there are some things that are in his control that maybe could be worked on, but whether it's this coating in the engine that they found, or you got the water issue here, the water pump issue, all the other issues that he's had, you'd have to kind of just say, screw it. I'm just going to show up and I'm just going to go race. I don't care about the championship. I don't care about my teammate. I don't care about anything. It's me and my car, my team. I'm just going to go race.
How do you think his side of the garage is reacting? Because there's that pendulum, isn't there, where course you're getting the same kit, but just the emotional support just starts to go the other way when it's not happening for you.
Yeah, it's a different world. I mean, I never raced here. I never had to...
Racing's racing, though.
It is.
Sports team's a sports team.
True. And this is what's so challenging about motorsports, right, is it's one team, one dream, but there are two cars and there are two crews and there are certain things that you only do on George's car or certain things that you only do on Kimmy's car. It's a healthy internal competition, but there is still some of that internal competition, I think, here more than anywhere. And so I just don't know. I feel like Toto Wolff runs an organization that tries very hard to keep all of that stuff buttoned up and keep it as clean and even and equitable between the two sides of the garage. And when others having more luck or just doing better, there are things you can do and ways you can kind of keep the other side of the garage meshed with one side of the garage meshed with the other side and kind of just keep the team morale up and team focused on making the whole team better.
So. For George, we've now got 4 weeks off. Your advice to him, I mean, is it an opportunity to pour through the data that you don't have time to when you're busy racing 6 races in 7 weeks, blah, blah, blah? Or actually, is it go to the beach, completely switch off? What is the better tactic for him going into the second half of the season?
So I think that things, marinate in a driver's brain with time. And so... if there are things that the team has determined George needs to work on, and I'm talking very high level, so let them pour through the data. Let them identify 3 things that you want to work on as George. Think about them for the next couple days, and then go do your 2 weeks in Barbados on the beach without really thinking about it. You know it because you've been told it, and you kind of just let it sit there in the back of your head. Go enjoy yourself. Go rest. Go relax, go recharge. You sleep on it, and it just sort of naturally embeds itself to a certain extent. And then, yeah, you come back, and you have your few days of prep, and off to Zandvoort we go.
Now, we discussed earlier Lando being 91 points behind Kimi Antonelli. Or is it doable? Is it not? 59 points, which is the gap between George and his teammate, is still very much game on if he gets the rub of the green, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But again, I think if you focus on it, it's actually to your detriment at this point. And it's partly because Kimi's just on such a roll, right? And so even with the bad luck that George has had, if you just want to look at pure pace and all the rest of it, there's been an advantage to Kimi's side. There's just no way to deny that. Stop looking at it. Stop thinking about it. Just go drive and let the chips fall where they may. I really, truly think that if he can actually kind of disconnect from the championship conversation a tiny bit, his chances actually could go up because there's still plenty of time to do it.
We're going to come on to Aston later in the show, but I think now is a relevant moment to tell you about something Adrian Newey said on Friday. I asked him about goals this weekend for the Aston Martin upgrade, and his answer was not about a position or a lap time. He is just obsessed with one thing, and that is making a racing car go faster, whether it's a setup thing, whether it's introducing new parts, new aero parts. And I found that a fascinating insight into his winning mentality. And it's kind of what we're saying maybe George Russell should do. Be a little bit more Adrian, right?
Yeah, because he's absolutely right. There's zero that Adrian Newey can do to affect the speed of a McLaren or a Mercedes or a Ferrari. All he can do is affect the speed of an Aston Martin. So it doesn't matter where you line up on the leaderboard. If you stay still, you're going backwards, right? So even if they were half a second ahead, you're going to keep trying to make it faster. So whether you're 2 seconds behind or half a second ahead, the goal is the same. The mentality should be the same. It's irrelevant what everyone else is doing. I'm going to control what I can control, focus on our own program, and if we do our job to the best of our abilities, hopefully that's enough to have us at the top of the leaderboard. And yeah, it is kind of like that with George. You just say, I can't control anything else. I'm not worried about anything else. I just want to go out and do what I do best, which is drive race cars.
This is a nice segue, I think, to talking about Ferrari, okay? Look at their last 2 races. Silverstone, Spa. They thought they were going to be nowhere. They win Silverstone and nearly win Spa. We come here where think they were most people's favourite for the win. And yet, you know, they've come away with a P4 and a P5. Talking about just focusing on yourselves and extracting the maximum from what you have, you can't help but think Ferrari didn't do that here.
Missed opportunity, for sure. It's so hard with race pace because Lando's the only guy with clean air, really. Neither one of those guys really got the opportunity to show what they had because the start wasn't great, because they're qualifying problems. It really all started there. I mean, they were my favorites coming in until P3, because I watched that lap from Lando, and sometimes you can just tell that a driver and a car are really connected very well. And there's certain things he was doing with the steering wheel when he was right on the balance, right on the edge of grip through 13, through 14. And you can tell that you're like, okay, this guy's in the zone. So I actually picked him for pole. I was nearly wrong. But Hamilton was so strong all weekend long. Obviously so good here. The parts of the racetrack that he was good at, you know, it's almost free lap time, you know, where he could make it up on the brakes compared to where, you know, maybe he had to be a little bit braver in turn four. If your car is good, it's easier to be more consistent in that kind of thing. So I thought he had a great shot at it. The real shame is that Hamilton got that penalty, because I do think he was quicker than Charles all weekend. I would have loved to have seen him start P2, and, you know, if he could have come out, whether it was in P2 or at least just behind the two McLarens, if he had anything for them, if they had enough car pace to try to do whatever the different strategy, the alternate strategy was from the McLarens. But yeah, they're going to be disappointed because there are still going to be some tracks coming up that they probably won't be as quick at.
What did you make of them starting on the soft tire, doing something different to the people around them then?
I like it when someone rolls the dice a little bit. To me, it smacked a little of, well, it worked in Spain, so let's give it another whirl. I'm sure it was a more thorough discussion than that. But no, I liked it, and I don't think it was a bad call necessarily. They were starting on the dirty side of the grid with Charles certainly, but you know, Fred said to us on the grid before the race, we're going to go with the strategy. This is a track position race. We're going to go with the strategy we think gives us the best track position, not the strategy that on paper is the quickest. And I actually kind of liked that. I thought that was aggressive, and there's a logic to it. And that's what they did. You know, if you can get a couple spots on the start with the soft, you got track position, it makes sense. Ultimately, it didn't work out, but they still had a strong weekend. But yeah, not as many points to show for it as they would have liked.
What did you make of him holding up Oscar Piastri in qualifying, and then I'm talking about Hamilton here, and then of course the speeding in the pit lane. It was 0.1 of a kilometer an hour. It's a slam dunk, isn't it? But just tiny little errors all the way through.
Yeah, and you saw his frustration after qualifying, right? Because
I couldn't get a word out of him in the press conference. And actually, I saw he apologized.
Yeah. You know, credit to him. It takes a big guy to do that. But the miscommunication with the Oscar thing, it's sloppy, right? It reeks of, you know, Ferrari of old, and they shouldn't be making those mistakes, and they know they shouldn't be making those mistakes. And I think that's why Hamilton was disappointed that he lost out on pole by such a small margin when he was so strong, and then a simple mistake cost them that penalty. Then in the race, the speeding thing, it's unfortunate, but it's almost better that it happened when he was running where he was and not fighting for the win.
Look, and from a championship point of view, just take a moment to pause. He's got that 50-point gap now to Antonelli. Do you think Ferrari have got the consistency now? I think that's the word. The consistency from race to race to deliver a consistent challenge to Antonelli.
Yeah, I do. I mean, you know, coming into this race, Hamilton had been on the podium for the last six races, you know, including obviously a win. Charlotte had a win in that time as well. That's a good run, and probably should have been on the podium, you know, here this weekend. So if you're delivering it that many different types of tracks over that amount of time, I think that shows that, yeah, the car's in a good place, the team's operating at a high level. Even if not every Sunday they nail every element, that's very hard to do in Formula One. It's not unique to them.
Now, Now, the form team in the midfield has to be Racing Bulls. And I was chatting to Alan Permain, their team principal in Spa, and he was saying, yeah, we've got the upgrade here, but where we're really going to see the benefit is at the Hungaroring. He said there, it's going to be 0.4 of a second faster than where we were before pre-upgrade. And boy, was it. And you know, that guy, Lindblad, qualifying P9, great result. And then, of course, to get both cars in the points, just that little team, you can't call it a little team, but it is the Red Bull Junior team, is doing a fantastic job.
They're doing an incredible job. And when you consider that the combined experience of their two drivers is like 2.5 seasons or whatever it is, it's even more impressive. But Lindblad's been great. I've been really impressed with how Lawson has stepped up. Because even though he's against a rookie, he's going against a rookie that obviously everybody's, you know, very high on. And he's the team leader with barely, you know, 2 years of experience in the series. And obviously a pretty rough go of it last year at the start of the season. So I think he's rebounded very well. I think they're pushing each other in a very, very good way, very healthy way. And obviously the team is performing and delivering with the car as well. So another double point score. They're ahead of Alpine now. They're, you know, fifth in the Constructors Championship. That's an impressive position to be in when you take kind of all the elements into account.
Okay, and what about Audi? Another team we talk about, you know, Ferrari were favorites. I definitely think there was an expectation that Audi would deliver here. You know, they tell us that, you know, the PU isn't where it should be, but the chassis, the fourth fastest chassis, they've been telling us. So where was it going to be this weekend? And yes, they did get points. They did. Hulk, the Incredible Hulk, got his first points of the season, but they were still beaten by the Racing Bulls.
I think when you look at the strength of the Audi and the weaknesses of the Audi, it's pretty clear. And like you said, that the power unit is an issue. It's not going to be an issue forever. And they're just showing that they're capable of building a very quick race car. They've got two very good drivers. Again, you've got the experience in Hulk, and he's such a good guy on a Sunday. I mean, it's so hard to count him out on a Sunday afternoon. And Bortoleto's proving to be a bit of a phenom himself. And so they've got a terrific driver lineup. And once the power unit side develops and matures a little bit, that's going to be an outfit that can take it to Racing Bulls a little bit more consistently. But, you know, Racing Bulls is more established, a bit more developed, also with a first-year power unit. So you can't really discount that. And you got to give, you know, Red Bull and Racing Bulls and RBPT their dues as well. But it's kind of a little team that could. I think they're going to surprise a lot of people once that power unit gets a little stronger.
Well, an Audi now jump ahead of Williams in the Constructors' Championship by 1 point to P8. Well, look, final thoughts. There was so much chat about Aston Martin's upgrade coming here to Hungary. 16 different changes was certainly what we could see on the outside, but I'm sure there was a whole load more under the skin of that car as well. Huge relief. The mechanics said that they could look into Fernando's eyes and see the fire burning again, which they hadn't seen all season. What did you make of the progress they've made?
It's super impressive. You know, it's not a strategy certainly I've ever seen before, waiting for 10 races and doing all the upgrades in one go. Certainly understand the philosophy and the reasoning behind it and think it was a good call. And the proof is in the stopwatch, essentially. And what a relief. You know, when you're not bringing systematic upgrades and scheduled upgrades where you can, one might hit, one might not, so you're happy one weekend, maybe a bit disappointed the next, you're putting all your eggs in one basket. I mean, this was going to make or break the morale of that team for the rest of this season. And, you know, thank goodness it went the way that it did. They reckon about a second and a half around this track, and this is not the longest track. That's an incredible jump. And we were joking in the F1 TV post-race show that probably felt like a win for Fernando, right? I bet he was jumping out of the car and fist bumping and high-fiving all the crew, because for them, for where they've been, what was that, 12th and a 13th or something, that is basically a win. And now they've got a foundation from which to build on. And this is weekend one of step one of the upgrades. There are more coming. Adrian said that. And when you have this many new parts on a car, you don't unlock its full potential on the first weekend. So the future could potentially be very bright, and that could be a regular point scoring car by the end of the year.
Because we've got the PU being upgraded at the next race in Zandvoort. Adrian then said there's more coming on the car itself. Was it for Monza and again for Baku? So, yeah, do you know, one of the people in the team told me that if you'd asked Fernando after Spa if he was going to continue in Formula One next year, he would have said absolutely not. After this race now, as I said, there's that fire in his eyes again. He's got something to fight for, and he's got his mojo back.
Definitely, maybe.
I like what you did there. Before we go, let's talk about how Formula One and the FIA have announced that Malaysia will join the 2026 calendar as host venue for the Bahrain Grand Prix, which hasn't been able to take place so far this year due to the situation in the Middle East. So we're now going racing at the Sepang International Circuit, just outside Kuala Lumpur in early October, that weekend between the Azerbaijan and Singapore Grand Prix. This is fantastic for so many reasons. Another race for us to enjoy, but also, Hinch, and I don't know whether you've been there, the Sepang International Circuit is mega. I've always loved it, right back from when we first went there in 1999. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I'm with you. I've been there in A1GP back in the day, and absolutely incredible facility. The racing circuit is mega. We were chatting with Montoya about it on the post show. He says it's his favorite track to drive a Formula One car on. That's a big statement, you know, from a guy that's raced Formula One cars at Spa and Suzuka and all the places.
He was always quick there, to be fair to JPM.
Because it's a track that you really have to commit to. And especially with this year's downforce levels, in his mind, there's going to be a lot of corners that aren't quite flat, but man, they're going to be quick. And so it's going to separate the drivers a little bit. It's going to be, I think, pretty raceable with this generation of car. One of the most challenging tracks physically. The heat is always a huge issue, and it's not like Singapore, which is, you know, just down the road where we race at night. And so, yeah, you deal with the heat and the humidity, but not the blaring sunshine. I didn't hear anything about this being a night race. I'm not even sure if...
No, it's a day race.
There you go. So that is going to add a whole new element, and the drivers don't have a ton of time to kind of prepare for that if they wanted to do something slightly different than just their normal Singapore prep, but... Fantastic venue. So excited that we're going back.
And I always remember that there was 4 o'clock on the dot, there was always a downpour.
You could set your watch by it.
Yeah. And I think it was the 2009 race that Jenson Button won. I think it was about lap 30. The downpour appeared and we never got going again. So yeah. The race was declared after.
And I remember there's one, I want to say Vettel won one where they had to have lights brought out to the podium because it had gone so late waiting for the rain to pass. And
it's one of those tracks that always invites a little bit of controversy. I'm thinking of Multi 21, Seb. I'll save the Australian accent, but I'm referring to 2013 when, of course, there was a bit of confusion, shall we say, among the Red Bull teammates, Mark Webber and Sebastian Vettel. But so it's really good, really exciting. It's going to be an intense part of the calendar. We're going to have, what is it, 9 races in 11 weeks.
Yeah, it'll be 3 triples in a row, basically, right? Yeah. To end the season. So yeah, it's going to be busy for the group, but always great to add races back to the calendar and give the fans a little bit more action to watch.
Well, look, back here in Hungary, you can maybe hear the teams all packing up to go off on their break. Final question for you, Hinch. We're going to end it the way we always end it. I want your driver of the day. Who impressed you the most?
I mean, it's really tough not to pick Lando. You know, it's I know that sounds a bit easy, but when you again you look at what he was able to do in those first 2 stints behind Oscar, you know, you heard him on the radio, he sounded bored. He was like, come on guys, I can go so much faster than this. And he didn't even sound like he was trying that hard. His pace on the older tires when he stayed out for the overcut, and then ultimately the pace at the end of the race, it was incredible. He just drove away from the field. So I think I got to give it to Lando.
More than Max?
It was between the two, right? It's going to be, yeah. I was going to say honorable mention to Max, but yeah, I think Max's job was harder. But Lando was racing Lando, right? So Max was impressive because he had someone to race. You could compare him to Hamilton. You could compare him to Antonelli. Lando, you could only compare to Lando because he was kind of in a class of his own. And I think that's arguably a bit more impressive, you know. And he, you know, Will Joseph was saying, all right, you got 12 seconds, calm down, right? You don't have to keep driving this fast. And it was worse for him to slow down, right? So, yeah, I think it's still got to go to Lando.
It was a statement race. It
very much so.
By Lando Norris, wasn't it? But equally, Hinch, any one of those top three, I think you could argue, was a driver of the day. I thought all three of them were hugely impressive, and just compare them to their teammates, huge gaps.
100%. Yeah, I agree completely. And again, when you take Antonelli's experience and age into account, it makes it seem all that more impressive. Verstappen's drive was one of those max drives. But the pressure up front, losing the lead, not losing his head, the pace with which he had, and again, how much faster he was than his teammate, I think also kind of plays into it. So all three of them did a phenomenal job. Great podium.
Great podium. Very worthy podium. Yeah. And I think we're both saying Lando Norris for driver of the day. Hinch, thank you so much for your time. Great to see you. I don't know whether you get any time off because you're the only man I know.
I've got one weekend off. I got one weekend off, and then we have six IndyCar races in 5 weeks. And then I'll go straight to Madrid.
Hinch, enjoy that one weekend off. Thank you very much for your time. Great to chat.
Always a pleasure.
Now, for more reaction and analysis from Budapest, go to F1.com, the F1 app, or at F1 on social media. And please do check out F1's other official podcasts. My guest on this week's F1 Beyond the Grid is Ollie Bearman. That's out on Wednesday, and you can watch our chat on the F1 YouTube channel. And Yuki Tsunoda is answering your questions on the latest episode of F1 Explains. That's just below this show on the F1 Nation feed right now. The summer break's here, and we're also going to be taking a break. We'll be back on the 17th of August to look ahead to F1's return at the Dutch Grand Prix in Zandvoort. So we'll speak to you then. Thank you very much for listening in this first half of the season. F1 Nation is produced by Formula One and Audioboom Studios.